The Irish are under attack today. The Irish do not have free speech anymore. The Irish have, they've begun to take back their country, and for that, they will be acutely punished. Here's the Irish Prime Minister on the coming looming free speech elimination.
We're going to make sure that we make those changes to our laws in the next couple of weeks to allow the Gardaí to use that evidence and go through that evidence and identify the people who are involved in these actions, and we are going to get them. In addition to that, I think it's now very obvious to anyone who might have doubted it that our incitement hatred legislation is just not up to date. It's not up to date for the social media age, and we need that legislation through, and we need it through within a matter of weeks, because it's not just the platforms who have a responsibility here, and they do. There's also the individuals who post messages and images online that stir up hatred and violence, and we need to be able to use laws to go after them individually as well.
Well, that's chilling. You need laws to go after people individually, not just the social media platforms that say the things that you don't want them to say. That's rather draconian. I don't know. If you were to ask me whether or not I had it in my bingo cards that the Prime Minister of Ireland would be advocating Stalinist tactics, I'm not so sure that I would have told you that that would happen in 2023. Nevertheless, you know, actually, golly, I wish that I could find this. I wrote a research paper once for Command and General Staff College. You know, back when I was affiliated with the Marine Corps. Well, that was back before Nazi Niles. Well, of course, that was back before she was canned from Church Militant, and Church Militant melted down and Boris was fired by his own board of directors. So a lot has transpired in the last couple days. Don't worry, I'm going to do a full download on the Boris saga later this week. And I am excited to announce to you that I will be interviewed by Dr. E. Michael Jones. It's a role reversal. Normally, I'm the one interviewing him. He's the interesting guy. Well, in this case, I am the world expert on all things Michael Voris. And I can't wait to give you details about when and where Dr. Jones is going to interview me. But back when I was working in the Marine Corps, in Command and General Staff College, this is a college for field grade officers to basically kind of study advanced warfare tactics and techniques. I wrote a research paper about Ireland. I've always loved Ireland and been obsessed with it for various reasons. Family, bloodline, heritage, patrimony, history of the world, history of Christendom, all of it. I've just loved all of it. And in my estimation at the time, this would have been years ago, I basically predicted that Ireland would become fully Soviet within the next decade. And the reasoning for that that I gave, and this was before ever stepping foot in Ireland, which I've been to a handful of times now in the intervening years. Without ever stepping foot in Ireland, one of the things that I noted was that their trajectory towards Stalinist, Soviet, Gestapo lifestyle, their trajectory is much faster than everybody else. They feel like they're playing catch-up in terms of the rest of Europe. Most of Europe has been progressing along the lines towards Stalinism for some time. And various parts of Europe have been progressing at various speeds, but they've been doing it for a much longer amount of time. Brussels, the Netherlands, even France have been leading the world, really, in experimentation on, you know, the most extreme version of socialism that you can imagine. And some places have been sensible, like England. England has been sensible about socialism and the common good. When you get to Ireland, though, they have been treated by the European Union like they are, I don't know, the Alabama of the European Union, the Mississippi of the European Union, the Deep South of the European Union. Why? Well, number one, they started off far, far behind. I mean, in the as far as the late 90s and early 2000s, the Irish people were overwhelmingly pro-life, pro-family. A lot of people there are connected to the land in various ways. It's an abundant, green, rich place where, gosh, stuff just grows. I mean, why? Well, it rains every other day. Constant source of water, constant source of sunlight, pretty stable temperatures. It doesn't go below freezing. And so everything is green. It's 1,000 shades of green. When you land in Ireland and you look around, it's 1,000 shades of the greenest green that you've ever seen, especially if you're there on a sunny day. Greens that you just don't see in the United States, but for certain parts of the country, certain times of the year, whatever. It's just stunningly, abundantly green. And that is why Irish milk, Irish butter is famous. Irish cheese, it's all famous. You can like taste the power of God's providence in Irish butter, Irish milk, Irish cheese. Some of you maybe go to like Costco and you buy Dubliner cheese. That's all made there. The other thing that is made there is Irish whiskey. Lots of moss everywhere. Okay. It's kind of like Scotland, you know, where they can get the peaty moss and therefore they can make Scotch whiskey. So you got Scotch whiskey from Scotland and you've got Irish whiskey from Ireland. Both have a sweetness to them, both as a result of sort of how the land is and the mossiness of the land. Well, Ireland has mostly woken up to the fact that they were behind in the European race towards socialism. And this feeling of keeping up with the Joneses, of Me Too, of we can do it better, of faster, of we have to out Brussels, has swept the nation. So in the years following, let's say the late 90s, early 2000s, when Ireland was staunchly pro-life, pro-Catholic, pro-tradition, there was a resurgence of Gaelic being spoken, an interest in the national identity, that all got wiped away. And suddenly, this idea of we are part of the European Union now and we better get with the program had taken over. And in the last 10 or 15 years, Ireland has done 40 years of cultural revolution. What took other nations 40 years to accomplish, Ireland has done in less than 10. They've gone from a country primarily, I mean, it's 95% Irish in this country, okay? And we're not talking about a huge nation. It's a small island with like 5 million people on it, okay? So what is that? I mean, it's Dallas, Texas, all right? I mean, Dallas, Texas, the Dallas-Fort Worth metropolitan area is basically the entire nation of Ireland. But when you are a small agrarian nation that's sort of known to be semi-low-tech, semi-behind the times, you know, you got people still hand-stitching wool sweaters in the Aran Islands using, you know, wool from the same sheep that have been herded there, I don't know. Since time immemorial, right? Since the time of the Druids. You know, these people feel like they have to get with the program. So they built a new airport, and they've built new streets and things, and they're showcasing. They've got a beautiful university in Dublin called Trinity University. It's probably considered amongst the elite universities in Europe. Maybe not the equivalent of Ivy League, but close, aspirationally Ivy League, sort of like Stanford in the United States. Stanford's not Ivy League, but it's darn near close, or it's considered as good. It's just not as old. Everything about Ireland has changed in the last 10 years. And they have, this is the power of the revolution. And this is something that I noted in my research paper, which incidentally, like the fact that I even got to write this, study this particular topic, I was studying Ireland in the greater context of the United States and Russia. And my point was, is that Russian Soviet style communism would find a better foothold in a place like Ireland that was slipping so fast and cultural identity being erased so quickly that the trajectory towards, you know, sort of this erasure of anything resembling a historical connection to the past, with all of that happening in Ireland, I argued that it would be much easier, that's much more fertile grounds just based on the rate of change. Yes, they started from behind. Yes, there still are so many good, normal people there that love Ireland, that love the faith, that have clung to it. But the faith has collapsed in Ireland. And you can see that in the numbers. And in a place where the faith collapses overnight, like in 10 or 15 years, where families disappear, where cultural traditions break down, where everyone suddenly just wants to be the most current thing, that is the environment you would need to implement Soviet-style government. That was my argument. That was my thesis. And it was interesting because most of my peers, most of the other folks in the class, okay, of course, we're all studying war with Russia, right? I mean, that's basically Command and General Staff College, is how do we beat Russia in a war? Nobody's actually thinking about China. Maybe you have to be a colonel and go to the advanced war fighting school to actually know the truth that we're going to have to fight China a long time before we're ever going to have to fight Russia. But okay, fine, we're still stuck on Russia, Russia, Russia. Maybe this is an anti-Trump thing. Who knows? This was during the Obama years. But okay, so here I am, and I'm in a class full of people who all get to choose a nation to focus on in the context of war with Russia, and everybody's focusing on like the Ukraine. This was before Russia invaded Ukraine. Ukraine, the state of Georgia, Lithuania. You know, all of these like sort of former Soviet states or close to them, Romania, Lithuania, even possibly people are focusing in the Middle East. They're looking at, well, okay, well, Russia and Assad, you know, and Syria. So what about Syria's neighbors and that sort of thing? And here I'm like, I'm gonna study Ireland. I had to get special permission from the course instructor, and I still have the email he sent me. He said, you know, I was circumspect in allowing you to choose Ireland, but I'm interested in hearing what you have to say about how Ireland may play a role in the United States conflict against Russia. And so at the end of the course, I made my case, I made my argument, And I did fine. I mean, at least from the instructor's point of view, I proved the case out pretty well. And he assigned me basically 100% and said, you're right, that, you know, Shannon Airport in Ireland, which has been strategically useful to the United States in prosecuting various air campaigns in the Middle East, we have used that airport to land and refuel and resupply and do all kinds of stuff. That would someday be a Russian airport. And that would be extremely useful to the Russians. Imagine if Russia had a Cuba, but for Europe. An island off the coast of the mainland that they could turn Soviet style and point missiles into Europe directly. I mean, that would be extremely useful to the Russians. And so what I had hypothesized was that Russian state actors have been interfering with and conducting cultural revolution in Ireland to help accelerate its decline towards Stalinism. This was something I wrote years ago. for Command and General Staff College, and my professors at the time thought that there was a pretty decent argument made here. Now, I'm not sure that any of them were necessarily Catholic or traditional Catholic or saw the world exactly the way I saw it, but I didn't necessarily allow my worldview to be totally obscured in the writing. You know, I basically lamented the fact that Ireland was losing its identity, almost on a deliberate course to lose or jettison its identity. And furthermore, what I argued, and what I argue every single day here on the Crusade Channel, is that when a nation forgets its identity, dispenses with it, forgets about it, or becomes ashamed of it, that's the ideal Soviet position. Once a society becomes ashamed of its identity, then that is the fertile ground for the implementation of communism. And why is that? Why exactly is that? Well, for example, when you know who you are, then you know that you are part of a larger organization. When you say I, or when you say we, you refer not only to yourself, but to your family. And not only to the living family, to your nuclear family, but to your lineage, to your lineage. And that's a very powerful obstacle for communism, for the implementation of communism. Because when you know that your ancestors cleared this land, when you look at Ireland, it's green, and then there are all these lines in the land. And what are the lines? The lines are stacked stone walls delineating the different plots of land. Who stacked those stone walls? Your ancestors stacked those stone walls over the last 1,000 years. These are 1,000-year-old walls, at least. They were stacked by hand, by your ancestors. The ground sweated the stones, and your Celtic forefathers, the Gaels, laboriously cleared the land stone by stone and stacked them bit by bit so that you could raise livestock and exist and subsist.